waited for my answer. Maybe, I said after a second of thought, if you tell me. I was hunting. Is that the best you can do? I criticized. That definitely doesn't prove I'm awake. He hesitated, and then spoke slowly, choosing his words with care. I wasn't hunting for food. I was actually trying my hand at tracking. I'm not very good at it. What were you tracking? I asked, intrigued. Nothing of consequence. His words didn't match his expression. He looked upset, uncomfortable. I don't understand. He hesitated. His face, shining with an odd green cast from the light of the clock, was torn. He took a deep breath. I owe you an apology. No, of course I owe you much, much more than that. But you have to know. The words began to flow so fast, the way I remembered he spoke sometimes when he was agitated, that I really had to concentrate to catch them all. That I had no idea. I didn't realize the mess I was leaving behind. I thought it was safe for you here. So safe. I had no idea that Victoria, his lips curled back when he said the name, would come back. I'll admit, when I saw her that one time, I was paying much more attention to James's thoughts. But I just didn't see that she had this kind of response in her. That she even had such a tie to him. I think I realize why now. She was so sure of him. The thought of him failing never occurred to her. It was her overconfidence that clouded her feelings about him. That kept me from seeing the depth of them, the bond there. Not that there's any excuse for what I left you to face. When I heard what you told Alice, what she saw herself, when I realized that you had to put your life in the hands of werewolves, immature, volatile, the worst thing out there besides Victoria herself, he shuddered, and the gush of words halted for a short second. Please know that I had no idea of any of this. I feel sick. Sick to my core, even now, when I can see and feel you safe in my arms. I am the most miserable excuse for... Stop! I interrupted him. He stared at me with agonized eyes, and I tried to find the right words. The words that would free him from this imagined obligation that caused him so much pain. They were very hard words to say. I didn't know if I could get them out without breaking down. But I had to try to do it right. I didn't want to be a source of guilt and anguish in his life. He should be happy, no matter what it cost me. I'd really been hoping to put off this part of our last conversation. It was going to bring things to an end so much sooner. Drawing on all my months of practice with trying to be normal for Charlie, I kept my face smooth. Edward, I said. His name burned my throat a little on the way out. I could feel the ghost of the hole waiting to rip itself wide again as soon as he disappeared. I didn't quite see how I was going to survive it this time. This has to stop now. You can't think about things that way. You can't let this guilt rule your life. You can't take responsibility for the things that happened to me here. None of it is your fault. It's just part of how life is for me. So if I trip in front of a bus, or whatever it is next time, you have to realize that it's not your job to take the blame. You can't just go running off to Italy because you feel bad that you didn't save me. Even if I had jumped off that cliff to die, that would have been my choice, and not your fault. I know it's your nature to shoulder the blame for everything, but you really can't let that make you go to such extremes. It's very irresponsible. Think of Esme and Carlisle and... I was on the edge of losing it. I stopped to take a deep breath, hoping to calm myself. I had to set him free. I had to make sure this never happened again. Isabella Marie Swan, he whispered, the strangest expression crossing his face. He almost looked mad. Do you believe that I asked the Volturi to kill me because I felt guilty? I could feel the blank incomprehension on my face. didn't you? Feel guilty? Intensely so. More than you can comprehend. Then, what are you saying? I don't understand. Bella, I went to the Volturi because I thought you were dead. He said, voice soft, eyes fierce. Even if I'd had no hand in your death, he shuddered as he whispered the last word. Even if it wasn't my fault, I would have gone to Italy. Obviously, I should have been more careful. I should have spoken to Alice directly, rather than accepting it secondhand from Rosalie. But really, what was I supposed to think when the boy said Charlie was at the funeral? What are the odds? The odds, he muttered then distracted. His voice was so low I wasn't sure I heard it right. The odds are always stacked against us. Mistake after mistake. I'll never criticize Romeo again. But I still don't understand, I said. That's my whole point. So what? Excuse me? So what if I was dead? He stared at me dubiously for a long moment before answering. Don't you remember anything I told you before? I remember everything that you told me, including the words that had negated all the rest. He brushed the tip of his cool finger against my lower lip. Bella, you seem to be under a misapprehension. He closed his eyes, shaking his head back and forth with half a smile on his beautiful face. It wasn't a happy smile. I thought I'd explained it clearly before. Bella, I can't live in a world where you don't exist. I am, my head swam as I looked for the appropriate word. Confused. That worked. I couldn't make sense of what he was saying. He stared deep into my eyes with his sincere, earnest gaze. I'm a good liar, Bella. I have to be. I froze, my muscles locking down as if for impact. The fault line in my chest rippled. The pain of it took my breath away. He shook my shoulder, trying to loosen my rigid pose. Let me finish. I'm a good liar, but still, for you to believe me so quickly, he winced. That was excruciating. I waited, still frozen. When we were in the forest, when I was telling you goodbye, I didn't allow myself to remember. I fought to keep myself in the present second only. You weren't going to let go, he whispered. I could see that. I didn't want to do it. It felt like it would kill me to do it, but I knew that if I couldn't convince you that I didn't love you anymore, it would just take you that much longer to get on with your life. I hoped that, if you thought I'd moved on, so would you. A clean break, I whispered through unmoving lips. Exactly. But I never imagined it would be so easy to do. I thought it would be next to impossible. That you would be so sure of the truth that I would have to lie through my teeth for hours to even plant the seed of doubt in your head. I lied. And I'm so sorry. Sorry because I hurt you. Sorry because it was a worthless effort. Sorry that I couldn't protect you from what I am. I lied to save you, and it didn't work. I'm sorry. But how could you believe me, after all the thousand times I've told you I love you? How could you let one word break your faith in me? I didn't answer. I was too shocked to form a rational response. I could see it in your eyes, that you honestly believe that I didn't want you anymore. The most absurd, ridiculous concept. As if there were any way that I could exist without needing you. I was still frozen. His words were incomprehensible, 'cause they were impossible. He shook my shoulder again, not hard, but enough that my teeth rattled a little. Bella, he sighed. Really, what were you thinking? And so I started to cry. The tears welled up and then gushed miserably down my cheeks. I knew it, I sobbed. I knew I was dreaming.
You're impossible, he said, and he laughed once, a hard laugh, frustrated.
How can I put this so that you'll believe me? You're not asleep, and you're not dead. I'm here, and I love you. I have always loved you, and I will always love you. I was thinking of you, seeing your face in my mind every second that I was away. When I told you that I didn't want you, it was the very blackest kind of blasphemy. I shook my head while the tears continued to ooze from the corners of my eyes. You don't believe me, do you? He whispered, his face paler than his usual pale. I could see that even in the dim light. Why can you believe the lie, but not the truth?
It never made sense for you to love me, I explained, my voice breaking twice. I always knew that.
His eyes narrowed, his jaw tightened. I'll prove you're awake, he promised. He caught my face securely between his iron hands, ignoring my struggles when I tried to turn my head away.
Please don't, I whispered.
He stopped, his lips just half an inch from mine.
Why not? He demanded.
His breath blew into my face, making my head whirl.
When I wake up,
he opened his mouth to protest, so I revised. Okay, forget that one. When you leave again, it's going to be hard enough without this, too. He pulled back an inch to stare at my face.
Yesterday, when I would touch you, you were so hesitant, so careful, and yet still the same. I need to know why. Is it because I'm too late? Because I've hurt you too much? Because you have moved on, as I meant for you to?
That would be quite fair. I won't contest your decision. So don't try to spare my feelings, please. Just tell me now whether or not you can still love me after everything I've done to you.
Can you? He whispered.
What kind of an idiotic question is that?
Just answer it, please.
I stared at him darkly for a long moment.
The way I feel about you will never change. Of course I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
That's all I needed to hear. His mouth was on mine then, and I couldn't fight him. Not because he was so many thousand times stronger than me, but because my will crumbled into dust the second our lips met. This kiss was not quite as careful as others I remembered, which suited me just fine. If I was going to rip myself up further, I might as well get as much in trade as possible. So I kissed him back, my heart pounding out a jagged, disjointed rhythm, while my breathing turned to panting, and my fingers moved greedily to his face. I could feel his marble body against every line of mine, and I was so glad he hadn't listened to me. There was no pain in the world that would have justified missing this. His hands memorized my face, the same way mine were tracing his, and in the brief seconds when his lips were free, he whispered my name. When I was starting to get dizzy, he pulled away, only to lay his ear against my heart. I lay there dazed, waiting for my gasping to slow and quiet. By the way, he said in a casual tone, I'm not leaving you. I didn't say anything, and he seemed to hear skepticism in my silence. He lifted his face to lock my gaze in his. I'm not going anywhere. Not without you. He added more seriously. I only left you in the first place because I wanted you to have a chance at a normal, happy human life. I could see what I was doing to you, keeping you constantly on the edge of danger, taking you away from the world you belonged in, risking your life every moment I was with you. So I had to try. I had to do something. And it seemed like leaving was the only way. If I hadn't thought you would be better off, I could have never made myself leave. I'm much too selfish.
Only you could be more important than what I wanted, what I needed. What I want and need is to be with you. And I know I'll never be strong enough to leave again. I have too many excuses to stay. Thank heaven for that. It seems you can't be safe, no matter how many miles I put between us. Don't promise me anything, I whispered. If I let myself hope and it came to nothing, that would kill me. Were all those merciless vampires had not been able to finish me off, hope would do the job. Anger glinted metallic in his black eyes. You think I'm lying to you now? No, not lying. I shook my head, trying to think it through coherently. To examine the hypothesis that he did love me, while staying objective, clinical, so I wouldn't fall into the trap of hoping. You could mean it, now. But what about tomorrow? When you think about all the reasons you left in the first place. Or next month, when Jasper takes a snap at me. He flinched. I thought back over those last days of my life before he left me. Tried to see them through the filter of what he was telling me now. From that perspective, imagining that he'd left me while loving me. Left me for me. His brooding and cold silences took on a different meaning. It isn't as if you hadn't thought the first decision through, is it? I guessed. You'll end up doing what you think is right. I'm not as strong as you give me credit for, he said. Right and wrong have ceased to mean much to me. I was coming back anyway, before Rosalie told me the news. I was already past trying to live through 1 week at a time, or even 1 day. I was fighting to make it through a single hour. It was only a matter of time, and not much of it, before I showed up at your window and begged you to take me back. I'd be happy to beg now if you'd like that. I grimaced. Be serious, please. Oh, I am, he insisted, glaring now. Will you please try to hear what I'm telling you? Will you let me attempt to explain what you mean to me? He waited, studying my face as he spoke to make sure I was really listening. Before you, Bella, my life was like a moonless night. Very dark, but there were stars, points of light and reason. And then you shot across my sky like a meteor. Suddenly everything was on fire. There was brilliancy. There was beauty. When you were gone, when the meteor had fallen over the horizon, everything went black. Nothing had changed, but my eyes were blinded by the light. I couldn't see the stars anymore, and there was no more reason for anything. I wanted to believe him, but this was my life without him that he was describing, not the other way around. Your eyes will adjust, I mumbled. That's just the problem. They can't. What about your distractions? He laughed without a trace of humor. Just part of the lie, love. There was no distraction from the agony. My heart hasn't beat in almost 90 years, but this was different. It was like my heart was gone, like I was hollow, like I'd left everything that was inside me here with you. That's funny, I muttered. He arched one perfect eyebrow. Funny? I meant strange. I thought it was just me. Lots of pieces of me went missing, too. I haven't been able to really breathe in so long. I filled my lungs, luxuriating in the sensation. And my heart? That was definitely lost. He closed his eyes and laid his ear over my heart again. I let my cheek press against his hair, felt the texture of it on my skin, smelled the delicious scent of him. Tracking wasn't a distraction then? I asked, curious, and also needing to distract myself. I was very much in danger of hoping. I wouldn't be able to stop myself for long. My heart throbbed, singing in my chest. No, he sighed.
That was never a distraction. It was an obligation. What does that mean?
It means that, even though I never expected any danger from Victoria, I wasn't going to let her get away with... Well, like I said, I was horrible at it. I traced her as far as Texas, but then I followed a false lead down to Brazil. And really, she came here. He groaned. I wasn't even on the right continent. And all the while, worse than my worst fears.
You were hunting Victoria?
I half shrieked as soon as I could find my voice, shooting through two octaves. Charlie's distant snore stuttered, and then picked up a regular rhythm again.
Not well, Edward answered, studying my outraged expression with a confused look. But I'll do better this time. She won't be tainting perfectly good air by breathing in and out for much longer.
That is out of the question, I managed to choke out.
Insanity. Even if he had Emmett or Jasper help him. Even if he had Emmett and Jasper help. It was worse than my other imaginings. Jacob Black standing across a small space from Victoria's vicious and feline figure. I couldn't bear to picture Edward there, even though he was so much more durable than my half-human best friend.
It's too late for her. I might have let the other time slide, but not now. Not after. I interrupted him again, trying to sound calm.
Didn't you just promise that you weren't going to leave? I asked, fighting the words as I said them, not letting them plant themselves in my heart.
That isn't exactly compatible with an extended tracking expedition, is it?
He frowned. A snarl began to build low in his chest.
I will keep my promise, Bella. But Victoria, the snarl became more pronounced, is going to die soon.
Let's not be hasty, I said, trying to hide my panic. Maybe she's not coming back. Jake's pack probably scared her off.
There's really no reason to go looking for her. Besides, I've got bigger problems than Victoria.
Edward's eyes narrowed, but he nodded.
It's true. The werewolves are a problem.
I snorted. I wasn't talking about Jacob. My problems are a lot worse than a handful of adolescent wolves getting themselves into trouble.
Edward looked as if he were about to say something, and then thought better of it.
His teeth clicked together and he spoke through them.
Really? He asked. Then what would be your greatest problem?
That would make Victoria's returning for you seem like such an inconsequential matter in comparison.
How about the second greatest? I hedged.
All right, he agreed, suspicious. I paused. I wasn't sure I could say the name.
There are others who are coming to look for me? I reminded him in a subdued whisper.
He sighed, but the reaction was not as strong as I would have imagined after his response to Victoria.
The Volturi are only the second greatest?
You don't seem that upset about it, I noted.
Well, we have plenty of time to think it through. Time means something very different to them than it does to you or even me. They count years the way you count days. I wouldn't be surprised if you were 30 before you crossed their minds again, he added lightly.
Horror washed through me.
30?
So his promises meant nothing in the end. If I were going to turn 30 someday, then he couldn't be planning on staying long. The harsh pain of this knowledge made me realize that I'd already begun to hope, without giving myself permission to do so.
You don't have to be afraid, he said,
anxious as he watched the tears do up again on the rims of my eyes.
I won't let them hurt you.
While you're here. Not that I cared what happened to me when he left. He took my face between his two stone hands, holding it tightly, while his midnight eyes glared into mine with the gravitational force of a black hole.
I will never leave you again.
But you said 30, I whispered. The tears leaked over the edge.
What? You're going to stay, but let me get all old anyway?
Right.
His eyes softened while his mouth went hard. That's exactly what I'm going to do. What choice have I? I cannot be without you, but I will not destroy your soul. Is this really? I tried to keep my voice even, but this question was too hard. I remembered his face when Aro had almost begged him to consider making me immortal. The sick look there. Was this fixation with keeping me human really about my soul? Or was it because he wasn't sure that he wanted me around that long? Yes? He asked, waiting for my question. I asked a different one. Almost, but not quite as hard. But what about when I get so old that people think I'm your mother? Your grandmother? My voice was pale with revulsion. I could see Gran's face again in the dream mirror. His whole face was soft now. He brushed the tears from my cheek with his lips. That doesn't mean anything to me, he breathed against my skin. You will always be the most beautiful thing in my world. Of course, he hesitated, flinching slightly. If you outgrew me, if you wanted something more, I would understand that, Bella. I promise I wouldn't stand in your way if you wanted to leave me. His eyes were liquid onyx and utterly sincere. He spoke as if he'd put endless amounts of thought into this asinine plan. You do realize that I'll die eventually, right? I demanded. He'd thought about this part, too. I'll follow after as soon as I can. That is seriously, I looked for the right word, sick. Bella, it's the only right way left. Let's just back up for a minute, I said. Feeling angry made it so much easier to be clear, decisive. You do remember the Volturi, right? I can't stay human forever. They'll kill me. Even if they don't think of me till I'm 30, I hissed the word. Do you really think they'll forget? No, he answered slowly, shaking his head. They won't forget. But? He grinned while I stared at him warily. Maybe I wasn't the only crazy one. I have a few plans. And these plans, I said, my voice getting more acidic with each word. These plans all center around me staying human. My attitude hardened his expression. Naturally. His tone was brusque. His divine face arrogant. We glowered at each other for a long minute. Then I took a deep breath, squared my shoulders. I pushed his arms away so that I could sit up. Do you want me to leave? He asked, and it made my heart flutter to see that this idea hurt him, though he tried not to show it. No, I told him, I'm leaving. He watched me suspiciously as I climbed out of the bed and fumbled around in the dark room looking for my shoes. May I ask where you are going? He asked. I'm going to your house, I told him, still feeling around blindly. He got up and came to my side. Here are your shoes. How did you plan to get there? My truck? That will probably wake Charlie, he offered as a deterrent. I sighed. I know, but honestly, I'll be grounded for weeks as it is. How much more trouble can I really get in? None. He'll blame me, not you. If you have a better idea, I'm all ears. Stay here, he suggested, but his expression wasn't hopeful. No dice, but you go ahead and make yourself at home, I encouraged, surprised at how natural my teasing sounded, and headed for the door. He was there before me, blocking my way. I frowned and turned for the window. I wasn't really that far to the ground, and it was mostly grass beneath. Okay, he sighed. I'll give you a ride. I shrugged. Either way, but you probably should be there too. And why is that? Because you're extraordinarily opinionated, and I'm sure you'll want a chance to air your views. My views on which subject? He asked through his teeth. This isn't just about you anymore. You're not the center of the universe, you know.
My own personal universe was, of course, a different story. If you're going to bring the Volturi down on us over something as stupid as leaving me human, then your family ought to have a say. A say in what? He asked, each word distinct. My mortality. I'm putting it to a vote. Chapter 24. Vote. He was not pleased. That much was easy to read in his face. But without further argument, he took me in his arms and sprang lithely from my window, landing without the slightest jolt, like a cat. It was a little bit farther down than I'd imagined. All right, then, he said, his voice seething with disapproval. Up you go. He helped me onto his back and took off running. Even after all this time, it felt routine, easy. Evidently, this was something you never forgot, like riding a bicycle. It was so very quiet and dark as he ran through the forest, his breathing slow and even. Dark enough that the trees flying past us were nearly invisible. And only the rush of air in my face truly gave away our speed. The air was damp. It didn't burn my eyes the way the wind in the big plaza had, and that was comforting. As was the night, too, after that terrifying brightness. Like the thick quilt I'd played under as a child, the dark felt familiar and protecting. I remembered that running through the forest like this used to frighten me, that I used to have to close my eyes. It seemed a silly reaction to me now. I kept my eyes wide, my chin resting on his shoulder, my cheek against his neck. The speed was exhilarating, 100 times better than the motorcycle. I turned my face toward him and pressed my lips into the cold stone skin of his neck. Thank you, he said, as the vague black shapes of trees raced past us. Does that mean you've decided you're awake? I laughed. The sound was easy, natural, effortless. It sounded right. Not really. More that, either way, I'm not trying to wake up. Not tonight. I'll earn your trust back somehow, he murmured, mostly to himself. If it's my final act. I trust you, I assured him. It's me I don't trust. Explain that, please. He'd slowed to a walk. I could only tell because the wind ceased, and I guessed that we weren't far from the house. In fact, I thought I could make out the sound of the river rushing somewhere close by in the darkness. Well, I struggled to find the right way to phrase it. I don't trust myself to be enough, to deserve you. There's nothing about me that could hold you. He stopped and reached around to pull me from his back. His gentle hands did not release me. After he'd set me on my feet again, he wrapped his arms tightly around me, hugging me to his chest. Your hold is permanent and unbreakable, he whispered. Never doubt that. But how could I not? You never did tell me, he murmured. What? What your greatest problem is? I'll give you one guess, I sighed, and reached up to touch the tip of his nose with my index finger. He nodded. I'm worse than the Volturi, he said grimly. I guess I've earned that. I rolled my eyes. The worst the Volturi can do is kill me. He waited with tense eyes. You can leave me, I explained. The Volturi, Victoria, they're nothing compared to that. Even in the darkness, I could see the anguish twist his face. It reminded me of his expression under Jane's torturing gaze. I felt sick and regretted speaking the truth. Don't, I whispered, touching his face. Don't be sad. He pulled one corner of his mouth up half-heartedly, but the expression didn't touch his eyes. If there was only some way to make you see that I can't leave you, he whispered.
Time, I suppose, will be the way to convince you.
I liked the idea of time.
Okay, I agreed.
His face was still tormented. I tried to distract him with inconsequentials.
So, since you're staying, can I have my stuff back? I asked, making my tone as light as I could manage.
My attempt worked, to an extent. He laughed. But his eyes retained the misery.
Your things were never gone, he told me. I knew it was wrong, since I promised you peace without reminders. It was stupid and childish, but I wanted to leave something of myself with you. The CD, the pictures, the tickets. They're all under your floorboards.
Really?
He nodded, seeming slightly cheered by my obvious pleasure in this trivial fact. It wasn't enough to heal the pain in his face completely.
I think, I said slowly, I'm not sure, but I wonder.
I think maybe I knew it the whole time.
What did you know?
I only wanted to take away the agony in his eyes. But as I spoke the words, they sounded truer than I expected they would. Some part of me, my subconscious maybe, never stopped believing that you still cared whether I lived or died. That's probably why I was hearing the voices.
There was a very deep silence for a moment.
Voices? He asked flatly.
Well, just one voice.
Yours.
It's a long story. The wary look on his face made me wish that I hadn't brought that up.
Would he think I was crazy like everyone else? Was everyone else right about that?
But at least that expression, the one that made him look like something was burning him, faded.
I've got time.
His voice was unnaturally even.
It's pretty pathetic.
He waited. I wasn't sure how to explain.
Do you remember what Alice said about extreme sports?
He spoke the words without inflection or emphasis. You jumped off a cliff for fun.
Right. And before that, with the motorcycle.
Motorcycle? He asked. I knew his voice well enough to hear something brewing behind the calm.
I guess I didn't tell Alice about that part.
No.
Well, about that. See, I found that when I was doing something dangerous or stupid, I could remember you more clearly, I confessed, feeling completely mental. I could remember how your voice sounded when you were angry. I could hear it, like you were standing right there next to me. Mostly I tried not to think about you, but this didn't hurt so much. It was like you were protecting me again. Like you didn't want me to be hurt.
And well, I wonder if the reason I could hear you so clearly was because underneath it all, I always knew that you hadn't stopped loving me. Again, as I spoke, the words brought with them a sense of conviction, of rightness. Some deep place inside me recognized truth. His words came out half-strangled.
You were risking your life to hear...
Shh, I interrupted him. Hold on a second. I think I'm having an epiphany here. I thought of that night in Port Angeles when I'd had my first delusion. I'd come up with two options, insanity or wish fulfillment. I'd seen no third option. But what if... What if you sincerely believed something was true, but you were dead wrong? What if you were so stubbornly sure that you were right that you wouldn't even consider the truth? Would the truth be silenced, or would it try to break through?
Option 3.
Edward loved me. The bond forged between us was not one that could be broken by absence, distance, or time. And no matter how much more special or beautiful or brilliant or perfect than me he might be, he was as irreversibly altered as I was. As I would always belong to him, so would he always be mine. Was that what I'd been trying to tell myself?
Oh.
Bella?
Oh, okay, I see.
Your epiphany? He asked, his voice uneven and strained.
You love me, I marveled. the sense of conviction and rightness washed through me again. Though his eyes were still anxious, the crooked smile I loved best flashed across his face. Truly, I do. My heart inflated like it was going to crack right through my ribs. It filled my chest and blocked my throat so that I could not speak. He really did want me the way I wanted him. Forever. It was only fear for my soul, for the human things he didn't want to take from me, that made him so desperate to leave me mortal. Compared to the fear that he didn't want me, this hurdle, my soul, seemed almost insignificant. He took my face tightly between his cool hands and kissed me until I was so dizzy the forest was spinning. Then he leaned his forehead against mine, and I was not the only one breathing harder than usual. "You are better at it than I was, you know," he told me.
"Better at what?"
"Surviving. You, at least, made an effort. You got up in the morning, tried to be normal for Charlie, followed the pattern of your life. When I wasn't actively tracking, I was totally useless. I couldn't be around my family. I couldn't be around anyone. I'm embarrassed to admit that I more or less curled up into a ball and let the misery have me." He grinned sheepish. It was much more pathetic than hearing voices. "And of course, you know I do that too." I was deeply relieved that he really seemed to understand, comforted that this all made sense to him. At any rate, he wasn't looking at me like I was crazy. He was looking at me like he loved me. "I only heard one voice," I corrected him. He laughed and then pulled me tight against his right side and started to lead me forward. "I'm just humoring you with this," he motioned broadly with his hand toward the darkness in front of us as we walked. There was something pale and immense there. The house, I realized. "It doesn't matter in the slightest what they say. This affects them now, too." He shrugged indifferently. He led me through the open front door into the dark house and flipped the lights on. The room was just as I remembered it. The piano and the white couches and the pale, massive staircase. No dust, no white sheets. Edward called out the names with no more volume than I'd use in regular conversation. "Carlyle? Esme? Rosalie? Emmett? Jasper? Alice?" They would hear. Carlyle was suddenly standing beside me, as if he'd been there all along. "Welcome back, Bella," he smiled. "What can we do for you this morning? I imagine, due to the hour, that this is not a purely social visit." I nodded. "I'd like to talk to everyone at once, if that's okay, about something important." I couldn't help glancing up at Edward's face as I spoke. His expression was critical but resigned. When I looked back to Carlyle, he was looking at Edward too.
"Of course," Carlyle said. "Why don't we talk in the other room?"
Carlyle led the way through the bright living room, around the corner to the dining room, turning on lights as he went. The walls were white, the ceilings high, like the living room. In the center of the room, under the low-hanging chandelier, was a large, polished oval table, surrounded by 8 chairs. Carlyle held out a chair for me at the head. I'd never seen the Cullens use the dining room table before. It was just a prop. They didn't eat in the house. As soon as I turned to sit in the chair, I saw that we were not alone. Esme had followed Edward, and behind her, the rest of the family filed in. Carlyle sat down on my right, and Edward on my left. Everyone else took their seats in silence. Alice was grinning at me, already in on the plot. Emmett and Jasper looked curious, and Rosalie smiled at me tentatively. My answering smile was just as timid. That was going to take some getting used to. Carlyle nodded toward me. "The floor is yours." I swallowed. Their gazing eyes made me nervous. Edward took my hand under the table. I peeked at him, but he was watching the others, his face suddenly fierce.
Well?
I paused.
I'm hoping Alice has already told you everything that happened in Volterra?
Everything, Alice assured me. I threw her a meaningful look.
And on the way?
That too, she nodded.
Good, I sighed with relief. Then we're all on the same page.
They waited patiently while I tried to order my thoughts.
So I have a problem, I began. Alice promised the Volturi that I would become one of you. They're going to send someone to check, and I'm sure that's a bad thing, something to avoid. And so now, this involves you all. I'm sorry about that. I looked at each one of their beautiful faces, saving the most beautiful for last.
Edward's mouth was turned down into a grimace.
But if you don't want me, then I'm not going to force myself on you, whether Alice is willing or not.
Esme opened her mouth to speak, but I held up one finger to stop her.
Please, let me finish. You all know what I want, and I'm sure you know what Edward thinks, too. I think the only fair way to decide is for everyone to have a vote. If you decide you don't want me, then I guess I'll go back to Italy alone. I can't have them coming here.
My forehead creased as I considered that. There was the faint rumble of a growl in Edward's chest. I ignored him.
Taking into account, then, that I won't put any of you in danger either way, I want you to vote yes or no on the issue of me becoming a vampire.
I half smiled on the last word and gestured toward Carlyle to begin.
Just a minute, Edward interrupted.
I glared at him through narrowed eyes. He raised his eyebrows at me, squeezing my hand.
I have something to add before we vote, I sighed.
About the danger Bella's referring to, he continued. I don't think we need to be overly anxious. His expression became more animated. He put his free hand on the shining table and leaned forward.
You see, he explained, looking around the table while he spoke.
There was more than one reason why I didn't want to shake Aro's hand there at the end. There's something they didn't think of, and I didn't want to clue them in, he grinned.
Which was? Alice prodded.
I was sure my expression was just as skeptical as hers.
The Volturi are overconfident, and with good reason. When they decide to find someone, it's not really a problem.
Do you remember Dimitri? He glanced down at me. I shuddered. He took that as a yes.
He finds people. That's his talent. Why they keep him.
Now, the whole time we were with any of them, I was picking their brains for anything that might save us, getting as much information as possible. So I saw how Dimitri's talent works. He's a tracker. A tracker 1,000 times more gifted than James was. His ability is loosely related to what I do, or what Aro does. He catches the flavor? I don't know how to describe it. The tenor of someone's mind, and then he follows that. It works over immense distances. But after Aro's little experiments, well, Edward shrugged.
You think he won't be able to find me, I said flatly.
He was smug.
I'm sure of it. He relies totally on that other sense. When it doesn't work with you, they'll all be blind.
And how does that solve anything?
Quite obviously, Alice will be able to tell when they're planning a visit, and I'll hide you. They'll be helpless, he said with fierce enjoyment. It will be like looking for a piece of straw in a haystack.
He and Emmett exchanged a glance and a smirk.
This made no sense. But they can find you, I reminded him.
And I can take care of myself. Emmett laughed and reached across the table toward his brother, extending a fist.
Excellent plan, my brother, he said with enthusiasm.
Edward stretched out his arm to smack Emmett's fist with his own.
No, Rosalie hissed. Absolutely not, I agreed. Nice, Jasper's voice was appreciative.
Idiots, Alice muttered.
Esme just glared at Edward. I straightened up in my chair, focusing. This was my meeting. All right, then. Edward has offered an alternative for you to consider, I said coolly. Let's vote. I looked toward Edward this time. It would be better to get his opinion out of the way. Do you want me to join your family? His eyes were hard and black as flint. Not that way. You're staying human. I nodded once, keeping my face businesslike, and then moved on.
Alice?
Yes.
Jasper?
Yes, he said, voice grave. I was a little surprised. I hadn't been at all sure of his vote, but I suppressed my reaction and moved on.
Rosalie?
She hesitated, biting down on her full, perfect bottom lip.
No.
I kept my face blank and turned my head slightly to move on, but she held up both her hands, palms forward.
Let me explain, she pleaded. I don't mean that I have any aversion to you as a sister. It's just that this is not the life I would have chosen for myself. I wish there had been someone there to vote no for me.
I nodded slowly and then turned to Emmett.
Hell yes, he grinned. We can find some other way to pick a fight with this Dimitri.
I was still grimacing at that when I looked at Esme.
Yes, of course, Bella. I already think of you as part of my family.
Thank you, Esme, I murmured as I turned toward Carlisle. I was suddenly nervous, wishing I had asked for his vote first. I was sure that this was the vote that mattered most, the vote that counted more than any majority. Carlisle wasn't looking at me.
Edward, he said.
No,
Edward growled. His jaw was strained tight, his lips curled back from his teeth.
It's the only way that makes sense, Carlisle insisted. You've chosen not to live without her, and that doesn't leave me a choice.
Edward dropped my hand, shoving away from the table. He stalked out of the room, snarling under his breath.
I guess you know my vote, Carlisle sighed.
I was still staring after Edward.
Thanks, I mumbled.
An ear-splitting crash echoed from the other room. I flinched and spoke quickly.
That's all I needed, thank you,
for wanting to keep me.
I feel exactly the same way about all of you, too.
My voice was jagged with emotion by the end. Esme was at my side in a flash, her cold arms around me.
Dearest Bella, she breathed.
I hugged her back. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed Rosalie looking down at the table, and I realized that my words could be construed in two ways.
Well, Alice, I said when Esme released me,
where do you want to do this? Alice stared at me, her eyes widening with terror.
No, 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 Edward roared, charging back into the room.
He was in my face before I had time to blink. Bending over me, his expression twisted in rage.
Are you insane? He shouted. Have you utterly lost your mind?
I cringed away, my hands over my ears.
Bella?
Alice interjected in an anxious voice.
I don't think I'm ready for that. I'll need to prepare.
You promised, I reminded her, glaring under Edward's arm.
I know, but seriously, Bella, I don't have any idea how to not kill you.
You can do it, I encouraged. I trust you. Edward snarled in fury. Alice shook her head quickly, looking panicked.
Carlisle?
I turned to look at him. Edward grabbed my face in his hand, forcing me to look at him. His other hand was out, palm toward Carlisle.
Carlisle ignored that.
I'm able to do it.
He answered my question. I wished I could see his expression.
You would be in no danger of me losing control.
Sounds good.
I hoped he could understand. It was hard to talk clearly the way Edward held my jaw.
Hold on, Edward said between his teeth. It doesn't have to be now. There's no reason for it not to be now, I said, the words coming out distorted. I can think of a few. Of course you can, I said sourly. Now let go of me. He freed my face and folded his arms across his chest. In about 2 hours, Charlie will be here looking for you. I wouldn't put it past him to involve the police. All three of them, but I frowned. This was always the hardest part. Charlie, Renee, now Jacob, too. The people I would lose, the people I would hurt. I wish there was some way that I could be the only one to suffer, but I knew that was impossible. At the same time, I was hurting them more by staying human. Putting Charlie in constant danger through my proximity. Putting Jake in worse danger still by drawing his enemies across the land he felt bound to protect. And Renee. I couldn't even risk a visit to see my own mother for fear of bringing my deadly problems along with me. I was a danger magnet. I'd accepted that about myself. Accepting this, I knew I needed to be able to take care of myself and protect the ones I loved, even if that meant that I couldn't be with them. I needed to be strong. In the interest of remaining inconspicuous, Edward said, still talking through his gritted teeth, but looking at Carlyle now, I suggest that we put this conversation off, at the very least until Bella finishes high school and moves out of Charlie's house. That's a reasonable request, Bella, Carlyle pointed out. I thought about Charlie's reaction when he woke up this morning, if, after all that life had put him through in the last week with Harry's loss, and then I had put him through with my unexplained disappearance, he were to find my bed empty. Charlie deserved better than that. It was just a little more time. Graduation wasn't so far away. I pursed my lips. I'll consider it. Edward relaxed, his jaw unclenched. I should probably take you home, he said, more calm now, but clearly in a hurry to get me out of here. Just in case Charlie wakes up early. I looked at Carlyle. After graduation? You have my word. I took a deep breath, smiled, and turned back to Edward. Okay, you can take me home. Edward rushed me out of the house before Carlyle could promise me anything else. He took me out the back, so I didn't get to see what was broken in the living room. It was a quiet trip home. I was feeling triumphant and a little smug. Scared stiff, too, of course, but I tried not to think about that part. It did me no good to worry about the pain, the physical or the emotional, so I wouldn't. Not until I absolutely had to. When we got to my house, Edward didn't pause. He dashed up the wall and through my window in half a second. Then he pulled my arms from around his neck and set me on the bed. I thought I had a pretty good idea of what he was thinking, but his expression surprised me. Instead of furious, it was calculating. He paced silently back and forth across my dark room while I watched with growing suspicion. Whatever you're planning, it's not going to work, I told him. Shh, I'm thinking. Ugh, I groaned, throwing myself back on the bed and pulling the quilt over my head. There was no sound, but suddenly he was there. He flipped the cover back so he could see me. He was lying next to me. His hand reached up to brush my hair from my cheek. If you don't mind, I'd much rather you didn't hide your face. I've lived without it for as long as I can stand. Now, tell me something. What? I asked, unwilling. If you could have anything in the world, anything at all, what would it be? I could feel the skepticism in my eyes. You? He shook his head impatiently. Something you don't already have. I wasn't sure where he was trying to lead me, so I thought carefully before I answered. I came up with something that was both true and also probably impossible. I would want... Carlyle not to have to do it. I would want you to change me. I watched his reaction warily, expecting more of the fury I'd seen at his house. I was surprised that his expression didn't change. It was still calculating, thoughtful. What would you be willing to trade for that? I couldn't believe my ears. I gawked at his composed face and blurted out the answer before I could think about it. Anything! He smiled faintly and then pursed his lips. 5 years? My face twisted into an expression somewhere between chagrin and horror. You said anything, he reminded me. Yes, but you'll use the time to find a way out of it. I have to strike while the iron is hot. Besides, it's just too dangerous to be human. For me, at least. So anything but that. He frowned. 3 years? No. Isn't it worth anything to you at all? I thought about how much I wanted this. Better to keep a poker face, I decided, and not let him know how very much that was. It would give me more leverage. 6 months? He rolled his eyes. Not good enough. 1 year, then, I said. That's my limit. At least give me 2. No way. 19 I'll do, but I'm not going anywhere near 20. If you're staying in your teens forever, then so am I. He thought for a minute. All right, forget time limits. If you want me to be the one, then you'll just have to meet one condition. Condition? My voice went flat. What condition? His eyes were cautious. He spoke slowly. Marry me first. I stared at him, waiting. Okay, what's the punchline? He sighed. You're wounding my ego, Bella. I just proposed to you, and you think it's a joke? Edward, please be serious. I am 100% serious. He gazed at me with no hint of humor in his face. Oh, come on, I said, an edge of hysteria in my voice. I'm only 18. Well, I'm nearly 110. It's time I settled down. I looked away, out the dark window, trying to control the panic before it gave me away. Look, marriage isn't exactly that high on my list of priorities, you know. It was sort of the kiss of death for Renee and Charlie. Interesting choice of words. You know what I mean. He inhaled deeply. Please don't tell me that you're afraid of the commitment. His voice was disbelieving, and I understood what he meant. That's not it exactly, I hedged. I'm afraid of Renee. She has some really intense opinions on getting married before you're 30. Because she'd rather you became one of the eternal damned than get married, he laughed darkly. You think you're joking, Bella. If you compare the level of commitment between a marital union, as opposed to bartering your soul in exchange for an eternity as a vampire, he shook his head. If you're not brave enough to marry me, then... Well, I interrupted. What if I did? What if I told you to take me to Vegas now? Would I be a vampire in 3 days? He smiled, his teeth flashing in the dark. Sure, he said, calling my bluff. I'll get my car. Damn it, I muttered. I'll give you 18 months. No deal, he said, grinning. I like this condition. Fine. I'll have Carlyle do it when I graduate. If that's what you really want. He shrugged, and his smile became absolutely angelic. You're impossible, I groaned. A monster. He chuckled. Is that why you won't marry me? I groaned again. He leaned toward me. His night-dark eyes melted and smoldered and shattered my concentration. Please, Bella, he breathed. I forgot how to breathe for a moment. When I recovered, I shook my head quickly, trying to clear my suddenly clouded mind. Would this have gone better if I'd had time to get a ring? No, no rings, I very nearly shouted.
Now you've done it, he whispered.
Oops.
Charlie's getting up. I'd better leave, Edward said with resignation. My heart stopped beating. He gauged my expression for a second. Would it be childish of me to hide in your closet then?
No,
I whispered eagerly.
Stay, please.
Edward smiled and disappeared. I seethed in the darkness as I waited for Charlie to check on me. Edward knew exactly what he was doing, and I was willing to bet that all the injured surprise was part of the ploy. Of course, I still had the Carlisle option, but now that I knew there was a chance that Edward would change me himself, I wanted it bad. He was such a cheater. My door cracked open.
Morning, Dad.
Oh, hey, Bella. He sounded embarrassed at getting caught.
I didn't know you were awake.
Yeah, I've just been waiting for you to wake up so I could take a shower. I started to get up.
Hold on,
Charlie said, flipping the light on. I blinked in the sudden brightness and carefully kept my eyes away from the closet.
Let's talk for a minute first.
I couldn't control my grimace. I'd forgotten to ask Alice for a good excuse.
You know you're in trouble.
Yeah, I know.
I just about went crazy these last 3 days. I come home from Harry's funeral and you're gone? Jacob could only tell me that you'd run off with Alice Cullen, and that he thought you were in trouble. You didn't leave me a number, and you didn't call. I didn't know where you were or when or if you were coming back. Do you have any idea how...
He couldn't finish the sentence. He sucked in a sharp breath and moved on.
Can you give me one reason why I shouldn't ship you off to Jacksonville this second?
My eyes narrowed. So it was going to be threats, was it? Two could play at that game. I sat up, pulling the quilt around me.
Because I won't go. Now just 1 minute, young lady.
Look, Dad, I accept complete responsibility for my actions, and you have the right to ground me for as long as you want. I will also do all the chores and laundry and dishes until you think I've learned my lesson. And I guess you're within your rights if you want to kick me out, too. But that won't make me go to Florida. His face turned bright red. He took a few deep breaths before he answered.
Would you like to explain where you've been?
Oh, crap.
There was an emergency.
He raised his eyebrows in expectation of my brilliant explanation. I filled my cheeks with air and then blew it out noisily.
I don't know what to tell you, Dad. It was mostly a misunderstanding.
He said, she said, it got out of hand. He waited with a distrustful expression. See, Alice told Rosalie about me jumping off the cliff. I was scrambling frantically to make this work, to keep it as close to the truth as possible, so that my inability to lie convincingly would not undermine the excuse. But before I could go on, Charlie's expression reminded me that he didn't know anything about the cliff. Major oops. As if I wasn't already toast.
I guess I didn't tell you about that, I choked out.
It was nothing. Just messing around, swimming with Jake. Anyway, Rosalie told Edward, and he was upset. She sort of accidentally made it sound like I was trying to kill myself or something. He wouldn't answer his phone, so Alice dragged me to L.A. to explain in person, I shrugged, desperately hoping that he would not be so distracted by my slip that he'd miss the brilliant explanation I provided. Charlie's face was frozen.
Were you trying to kill yourself, Bella?
No, of course not. Just having fun with Jake. Cliff diving. The LaPush kids do it all the time. Like I said, nothing. Charlie's face heated up, from frozen to hot with fury.
What's it to Edward Cullen, anyway? He barked. All this time, he's just left you dangling without a word.
I interrupted him. Another misunderstanding. His face flushed again.
So is he back, then?
I'm not sure what the exact plan is. I think they all are. He shook his head, the vein in his forehead pulsing. I want you to stay away from him, Bella. I don't trust him. He's rotten for you. I won't let him mess you up like that again.
Fine, I said curtly.
Charlie rocked back onto his heels.
Oh.
He scrambled for a second, exhaling loudly in surprise.
I thought you were going to be difficult.
I am, I stared straight into his eyes. I meant, fine, I'll move out. His eyes bulged. His face turned puce. My resolve wavered as I started to worry about his health. He was no younger than Harry.
Dad, I don't want to move out, I said in a softer tone. I love you.
I know you're worried, but you need to trust me on this. And you're going to have to ease up on Edward if you want me to stay. Do you want me to live here or not?
That's not fair, Bella.
You know I want you to stay.
Then be nice to Edward, because he's going to be where I am.
I said it with confidence. The conviction of my epiphany was still strong.
Not under my roof, Charlie stormed.
I sighed a heavy sigh.
Look, I'm not going to give you any more ultimatums tonight. Or I guess it's this morning. Just think about it for a few days, okay? But keep in mind that Edward and I are sort of a package deal.
Bella,
think it over, I insisted.
And while you're doing that, could you give me some privacy? I really need a shower.
Charlie's face was a strange shade of purple, but he laughed, slamming the door behind him. I heard him stomp furiously down the stairs. I threw off my quilt, and Edward was already there, sitting in the rocking chair as if he'd been present through the whole conversation.
Sorry about that, I whispered.
It's not as if I don't deserve far worse, he murmured. Don't start anything with Charlie over me, please.
Don't worry about it, I breathed as I gathered up my bathroom things and a set of clean clothes. I will start exactly as much as is necessary, and no more than that.
Or are you trying to tell me I have nowhere to go?
I widened my eyes with false alarm.
You'd move in with a house full of vampires?
That's probably the safest place for someone like me. Besides, I grinned, if Charlie kicks me out, then there's no need for a graduation deadline, is there?
His jaw tightened.
So eager for eternal damnation, he muttered.
You know you don't really believe that.
Oh, don't I? He fumed.
No, you don't.
He glowered at me and started to speak, but I cut him off.
If you really believe that you'd lost your soul, then when I found you in Volterra, you would have realized immediately what was happening, instead of thinking we were both dead together. But you didn't. You said, amazing, Carlyle was right, I reminded him triumphant. There's hope in you after all.
For once, Edward was speechless.
So let's both just be hopeful, all right? I suggested. Not that it matters. If you stay, I don't need heaven.
He got up slowly and came to put his hands on either side of my face as he stared into my eyes.
Forever, he vowed, still a little staggered. That's all I'm asking for, I said, and stretched up on my toes so that I could press my lips to his. Epilogue. Treaty. Almost everything was back to normal. The good, pre-zombie normal. In less time than I would have believed possible. The hospital welcomed Carlyle back with eager arms, not even bothering to conceal their delight that Esme had found life in L.A. so little to her liking. Thanks to the calculus test I'd missed while abroad, Alice and Edward were in better shape to graduate than I was at the moment. Suddenly, college was a priority. College was still Plan B, on the off chance that Edward's offer swayed me from the post-graduation Carlyle option. Many deadlines had passed me by, but Edward had a new stack of applications for me to fill out every day. He'd already done the Harvard route, so it didn't bother him that, thanks to my procrastination, we might both end up at Peninsula Community College next year.
Charlie was not happy with me, or speaking to Edward. But at least Edward was allowed, during my designated visiting hours, inside the house again. I just wasn't allowed out of it. School and work were the only exceptions, and the dreary, dull yellow walls of my classrooms had become oddly inviting to me of late. That had a lot to do with the person who sat in the desk beside me. Edward had resumed his schedule from the beginning of the year, which put him in most of my classes again. My behavior had been such last fall, after the Cullens' supposed move to L.A., that the seat beside me had never been filled. Even Mike, always eager to take any advantage, had kept a safe distance. With Edward back in place, it was almost as if the last 8 months were just a disturbing nightmare. Almost, but not quite. There was the house arrest situation, for one thing. And for another, before the fall, I hadn't been best friends with Jacob Black. So, of course, I hadn't missed him then. I wasn't at liberty to go to La Push, and Jacob wasn't coming to see me. He wouldn't even answer my phone calls. I made these calls mostly at night, after Edward had been kicked out, promptly at 9 by a grimly gleeful Charlie, and before Edward snuck back through my window when Charlie was asleep. I chose that time to make my fruitless calls because I'd noticed that Edward made a certain face every time I mentioned Jacob's name, sort of disapproving and wary, maybe even angry. I guessed that he had some reciprocal prejudice against the werewolves, though he wasn't as vocal as Jacob had been about the bloodsuckers. So I didn't mention Jacob much. With Edward near me, it was hard to think about unhappy things, even my former best friend, who was probably very unhappy right now due to me. When I did think of Jake, I always felt guilty for not thinking of him more. The fairy tale was back on. Prince returned, bad spell broken. I wasn't sure exactly what to do about the leftover unresolved character. Where was his happily ever after? Weeks passed, and Jacob still wouldn't answer my calls. It started to become a constant worry, like a dripping faucet in the back of my head that I couldn't shut off or ignore. Drip, drip, drip. Jacob, Jacob, Jacob. So though I didn't mention Jacob much, sometimes my frustration and anxiety boiled over. "It's just plain rude," I vented one Saturday afternoon when Edward picked me up from work. Being angry about things was easier than feeling guilty. Downright insulting. I'd varied my pattern, in hopes of a different response. I'd called Jake from work this time, only to get an unhelpful Billy, again. "Billy said he didn't want to talk to me," I fumed, glaring at the rain oozing down the passenger window. "That he was there, and wouldn't walk 3 steps to get to the phone. Usually Billy just says he's out or busy or sleeping or something. I mean, it's not like I didn't know he was lying to me, but at least it was a polite way to handle it. I guess Billy hates me now, too. It's not fair." "It's not you, Bella," Edward said quietly. "Nobody hates you." "Feels that way," I muttered, folding my arms across my chest. It was no more than a stubborn gesture. There was no hole there now. I could barely remember the empty feeling anymore. "Jacob knows we're back. And I'm sure that he's ascertained that I'm with you," Edward said. "He won't come anywhere near me. The enmity is rooted too deeply." "That's stupid. He knows you're not, like other vampires." "There's still good reason to keep a safe distance." I glared blindly out the windshield, seeing only Jacob's face, set in the bitter mask I hated. "Bella, we are what we are," Edward said quietly. "I can control myself, but I doubt he can. He's very young. It would most likely turn into a fight. And I don't know if I could stop it before I ki-" He broke off, and then quickly continued, "before I hurt him. You would be unhappy. I don't want that to happen." I remembered what Jacob had said in the kitchen, hearing the words with perfect recall in his husky voice. "I'm not sure that I'm even-tempered enough to handle that. You probably wouldn't like it so much if I killed your friend." But he'd been able to handle it that time.
Edward Cullen, I whispered. Were you about to say killed him? Were you?
He looked away from me, staring into the rain. In front of us, the red light I hadn't noticed turned green, and he started forward again, driving very slowly. Not his usual way of driving.
I would try very hard not to do that, Edward finally said.
I stared at him with my mouth hanging open, but he continued to look straight ahead. We were paused at the corner stop sign. Abruptly, I remembered what had happened to Paris when Romeo came back. The stage directions were simple. They fight. Paris falls. But that was ridiculous. Impossible.
Well, I said and took a deep breath, shaking my head to dispel the words in my head.
Nothing like that is ever going to happen. So there's no reason to worry about it. And you know Charlie's staring at the clock right now. You'd better get me home before I get in more trouble for being late.
I turned my face up toward him, to smile half-heartedly. Every time I looked at his face, that impossibly perfect face, my heart pounded strong and healthy and very there in my chest. This time, the pounding raced ahead of its usual besotted pace. I recognized the expression on his statue-still face.
You're already in more trouble, Bella, he whispered through unmoving lips.
I slid closer, clutching his arm as I followed his gaze to see what he was seeing. I don't know what I expected. Maybe Victoria standing in the middle of the street, her flaming red hair blowing in the wind, or a line of tall black cloaks, or a pack of angry werewolves. But I didn't see anything at all.
What? What is it?
He took a deep breath.
Charlie.
My dad?
I screeched. He looked down at me then, and his expression was calm enough to ease some of my panic.
Charlie is probably not going to kill you, but he's thinking about it, he told me.
He started to drive forward again, down my street, but he passed the house and parked by the edge of the trees.
What did I do? I gasped.
Edward glanced back at Charlie's house.
I followed his gaze and noticed for the first time what was parked in the driveway next to the cruiser. Shiny, bright red, impossible to miss. My motorcycle flaunting itself in the driveway.
Edward had said that Charlie was ready to kill me, so he must know that it was mine. There was only one person who could be behind this treachery.
No, I gasped. Why? Why would Jacob do this to me?
The sting of betrayal washed through me.
I had trusted Jacob implicitly, trusted him with every single secret I had. He was supposed to be my safe harbor, the person I could always rely on. Of course things were strained right now, but I didn't think any of the underlying foundation had changed. I didn't think that was changeable. What had I done to deserve this?
Charlie was going to be so mad. And worse than that, he was going to be hurt and worried. Didn't he have enough to deal with already?
I would have never imagined that Jake could be so petty and just plain mean.
Tears sprang, smarting, into my eyes, but they were not tears of sadness. I had been betrayed. I was suddenly so angry that my head throbbed like it was going to explode.
Is he still here? I hissed.
Yes. He's waiting for us there, Edward told me, nodding toward the slender path that divided the dark fringe of the forest in two. I jumped out of the car, launching myself toward the trees, with my hands already balled into fists for the first punch. Why did Edward have to be so much faster than me? He caught me around the waist before I made the path.
Let me go! I'm going to murder him! Traitor!
I shouted the epithet toward the trees.
Charlie will hear you, Edward warned me.
And once he gets you inside, he may brick over the doorway. I glanced back at the house instinctively, and it seemed like the glossy red bike was all I could see. I was seeing red. My head throbbed again.
Just give me one round with Jacob, and then I'll deal with Charlie.
I struggled futilely to break free.
Jacob Black wants to see me. That's why he's still here.
That stopped me cold, took the fight right out of me,
My hands went limp. They fight. Paris falls. I was furious, but not that furious.
Talk? I asked.
More or less.
How much more?
My voice shook. Edward smoothed my hair back from my face. Don't worry. He is not here to fight me. He's acting as spokesperson for the pack.
Oh.
Edward looked at the house again, then tightened his arm around my waist and pulled me toward the woods. We should hurry. Charlie's getting impatient. We didn't have to go far. Jacob waited just a short ways up the path. He lounged against a mossy tree trunk as he waited, his face hard and bitter, exactly the way I knew it would be. He looked at me, and then at Edward. Jacob's mouth stretched into a humorless sneer, and he shrugged away from the tree. He stood on the balls of his bare feet, leaning slightly forward, with his trembling hands clenched into fists. He looked bigger than the last time I'd seen him. Somehow, impossibly, he was still growing. He would tower over Edward if they stood next to each other. But Edward stopped as soon as we saw him, leaving a wide space between us and Jacob. Edward turned his body, shifting me so that I was behind him. I leaned around him to stare at Jacob, to accuse him with my eyes. I would have thought that seeing his resentful, cynical expression would only make me angrier. Instead, it reminded me of the last time I'd seen him, with tears in his eyes. My fury weakened, faltered, as I stared at Jacob. It had been so long since I'd seen him. I hated that our reunion had to be like this.
Bella,
Jacob said as a greeting, nodding once toward me without looking away from Edward.
Why?
I whispered, trying to hide the sound of the lump in my throat.
How could you do this to me, Jacob?
The sneer vanished, but his face stayed hard and rigid.
It's for the best.
What is that supposed to mean? Do you want Charlie to strangle me? Or did you want him to have a heart attack like Harry? No matter how mad you are at me, how could you do this to him?
Jacob winced, and his eyebrows pulled together. But he didn't answer. He didn't want to hurt anyone. He just wanted to get you grounded so that you wouldn't be allowed to spend time with me, Edward murmured, explaining the thoughts Jacob wouldn't say. Jacob's eyes sparked with hate as he glowered at Edward again.
Ah, Jake, I groaned. I'm already grounded. Why do you think I haven't been down to La Push to kick your butt for avoiding my phone calls?
Jacob's eyes flashed back to me. Confused for the first time.
That's why?
He asked, and then locked his jaw, like he was sorry he'd said anything.
He thought I wouldn't let you,
not Charlie, Edward explained again.
Stop that, Jacob snapped.
Edward didn't answer. Jacob shuddered once, and then gritted his teeth as hard as his fists.
Bella wasn't exaggerating about your abilities, he said through his teeth. So you must already know why I'm here.
Yes, Edward agreed in a soft voice. But before you begin, I need to say something. Jacob waited, clenching and unclenching his hands as he tried to control the shivers rolling down his arms.
Thank you,
Edward said, and his voice throbbed with the depth of his sincerity. I will never be able to tell you how grateful I am. I will owe you for the rest of my existence. Jacob stared at him blankly, his shudders stilled by surprise. He exchanged a quick glance with me, but my face was just as mystified.
For keeping Bella alive,
Edward clarified, his voice rough and fervent. When I didn't.
Edward,
I started to say, but he held one hand up, his eyes on Jacob. Understanding washed over Jacob's face before the hard mask returned.
I didn't do it for your benefit.
I know. But that doesn't erase the gratitude I feel. I thought you should know. If there's ever anything in my power to do for you... Jacob raised one black brow. Edward shook his head. That's not in my power.
Whose then? Jacob growled.
Edward looked down at me.
Hers. I'm a quick learner, Jacob Black.
and I don't make the same mistake twice. I'm here until she orders me away. I was immersed momentarily in his golden gaze. It wasn't hard to understand what I'd missed in the conversation. The only thing that Jacob would want from Edward would be his absence.
Never, I whispered, still locked in Edward's eyes.
Jacob made a gagging sound. I unwillingly broke free from Edward's gaze to frown at Jacob. Was there something else you needed, Jacob? You wanted me in trouble? Mission accomplished. Charlie might just send me to military school. But that won't keep me away from Edward. There's nothing that can do that. What more do you want? Jacob kept his eyes on Edward. I just needed to remind your blood-sucking friends of a few key points in the treaty they agreed to. The treaty that is the only thing stopping me from ripping his throat out right this minute. We haven't forgotten, Edward said at the same time that I demanded. What key points? Jacob still glowered at Edward, but he answered me. The treaty is quite specific. If any of them bite a human, the truce is over. Bite, not kill, he emphasized. Finally, he looked at me. His eyes were cold. It only took me a second to grasp the distinction, and then my face was as cold as his. That's none of your business. The hell it was all he managed to choke out. I didn't expect my hasty words to bring on such a strong response. Despite the warning he'd come to give, he must not have known. He must have thought the warning was just a precaution. He hadn't realized, or didn't want to believe, that I had already made my choice, that I was really intending to become a member of the Cullen family. My answer sent Jacob into near convulsions. He pressed his fists hard against his temples, closing his eyes tight and curling in on himself as he tried to control the spasms. His face turned sallow green under the russet skin. Jake, you okay? I asked anxiously. I took a half step toward him. Then Edward caught me and yanked me back behind his own body. Careful. He's not under control, he warned me. But Jacob was already somewhat himself again. Only his arms were shaking now. He scowled at Edward with pure hate. Ugh, I would never hurt her. Neither Edward or I missed the inflection, or the accusation it contained. A low hiss escaped Edward's lips. Jacob clenched his fists reflexively. Bella! Charlie's roar echoed from the direction of the house. You get in this house this instant! All of us froze, listening to the silence that followed. I was the first to speak. My voice trembled. Crap! Jacob's furious expression faltered. I am sorry about that, he muttered. I had to do what I could. I had to try. Thanks. The tremor in my voice ruined the sarcasm. I stared up the path, half expecting Charlie to come barreling through the wet ferns like an enraged bull. I would be the red flag in that scenario. Just one more thing, Edward said to me, and then he looked at Jacob. We found no trace of Victoria on our side of the line. Have you? He knew the answer as soon as Jacob thought it, but Jacob spoke the answer anyway. The last time was while Bella was away. We let her think she was slipping through. We were tightening the circle, getting ready to ambush her. Ice shot down my spine. But then she took off like a bat out of hell. Near as we can tell, she caught your little female scent and bailed. She hasn't come near our land since. Edward nodded. When she comes back, she's not your problem anymore. She killed on our turf, Jacob hissed. She's ours. No, I began to protest both declarations. Bella, I see his car, and I know you're out there. If you aren't inside this house in 1 minute. Charlie didn't bother to finish his threat. Let's go. Edward said. I looked back at Jacob, torn. Would I see him again? Sorry, he whispered so low that I had to read his lips to understand. Bye, Bells. You promised, I reminded him desperately. Still friends, right?
Jacob shook his head slowly, and the lump in my throat nearly strangled me. You know how hard I've tried to keep that promise, but I can't see how to keep trying. Not now. He struggled to keep his hard mask in place, but it wavered, and then disappeared. Miss you, he mouthed. One of his hands reached toward me, his fingers outstretched like he wished they were long enough to cross the distance between us. Me too, I choked out. My hand reached toward his across the wide space. Like we were connected. The echo of his pain twisted inside me. His pain, my pain. Jake. I took a step toward him. I wanted to wrap my arms around his waist and erase the expression of misery on his face. Edward pulled me back again, his arms restraining instead of defending. It's okay, I promised him, looking up to read his face with trust in my eyes. He would understand. His eyes were unreadable, his face expressionless, cold. It's not. Let her go, Jacob snarled, furious again. She wants to. He took two long strides forward. A glint of anticipation flashed in his eyes. His chest seemed to swell as it shuddered. Edward pushed me behind himself, willing to face Jacob. No, Edward! Isabella Swan! Come on, Charlie's mad! My voice was panicked, but not because of Charlie now. Hurry! I tugged on him and he relaxed a little. He pulled me back slowly, always keeping his eyes on Jacob as we retreated. Jacob watched us with a dark scowl on his bitter face. The anticipation drained from his eyes, and then just before the forest came between us, his face suddenly crumpled in pain. I knew that last glimpse of his face would haunt me until I saw him smile again. And right there I vowed that I would see him smile, and soon I would find a way to keep my friend. Edward kept his arm tight around my waist, holding me close. That was the only thing that held the tears inside my eyes. I had some serious problems. My best friend counted me with his enemies. Victoria was still on the loose, putting everyone I loved in danger. If I didn't become a vampire soon, the Volturi would kill me. And now it seemed that if I did, the Quileute werewolves would try to do the job themselves, along with trying to kill my future family. I didn't think they had any chance, really, but would my best friend get himself killed in the attempt? Very serious problems. So why did they all suddenly seem insignificant when we broke through the last of the trees and I caught sight of the expression on Charlie's purple face? Edward squeezed me gently. I'm here. I drew in a deep breath. That was true. Edward was here, with his arms around me. I could face anything as long as that was true. I squared my shoulders and walked forward to meet my fate, with my destiny solidly at my side. This is Ileana Kadushin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of New Moon by Stephanie Meyer. This program was produced and directed by Garrett Scott. Executive Producer Jacob Bronstein. Text copyright 2006 by Stephanie Meyer. Production copyright 2006 Random House Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.